Have you finished your Christmas shopping yet? Well, if not, we'll have some unusual and useful gift ideas for you during this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and this is On Your Money for this Tuesday, December 18th. Financial planner Kevin McKinley is making his list and checking it twice, and we'll also have advice for you today on pensions and buying a car, and answers to your personal finance questions, too. Call us if you have one at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
Have you finished your Christmas shopping yet?
Yes, I've been told that I have finished my Christmas shopping.
You've been told because you want to keep going?
I keep going. I never know when to stop. It seems to just blaze right through the 25th and beyond. So, yes, I've been told that we have finished our Christmas shopping.
And do you have your snowblower all you know, ready to go, oiled up and ready to go for another storm?
Well, Joy, as you and both of our regular listeners know, I am a job creator.
That's right.
And one of the ways that I do that is by paying someone a nominal fee to clear our driveway and run the plow through there at about 3 o'clock in the morning, it seems like. But nope, I'm counting on them to get me out of the driveway and get me to work safe and sound.
Good for you. Well, you know, I'm not completely done with my holiday shopping. There's lots of hustle and bustle going on, and you're telling me that it might be a good idea to maybe buy myself an unusual gift during this time of year. You want me to buy myself a flu shot?
Yeah, it's the gift that that keeps on giving and avoids giving it to other people. The season's in full swing. We're all busy. We're mingling in the stores. We're traveling in airports, etc., going to the parties, school functions, whatever. And it's a prime time to not only get this illness but pass it on to other ones. And it can really make a big difference in how much you enjoy the holidays and what you can accomplish, and in some cases even be life-threatening. And the cost of getting the flu shot versus getting the flu are so favorable for some preventive measures that it really is something that we should definitely consider doing.
So what kind of costs are we talking about?
Now, there was a great article at Investopedia a little while ago that talked about all the different costs involved. First of all, we're looking at about 70 million missed days of work during the calendar year. About 200,000 people are hospitalized with the flu each year, and there are somewhere from 3,000 to 49,000 deaths attributed to the flu each year over the last several decades. In terms of productivity, American companies lose about $16 billion every single year from people out with the flu, and about $87 billion is directed toward trying to get better from the flu every year that would otherwise be spent in more preferable places. Now, a flu shot costs about $35, and the average amount of money spent trying to get better from the flu was about $130, and that, of course, includes a doctor visit in there as well, too. So some people spend several hundred to several thousand dollars trying to get better from the flu. So if you haven't already and you're thinking about doing it and you're eligible, you might want to spend a few bucks to get one of those flu shots as soon as possible.
Yeah, I did actually get my flu shot, and I'm glad I did because I did see a news story earlier this month that said we've had an early start to the flu season in Wisconsin, well over 100 some cases at the start of the month when normally there's only a few, and it's a particularly nasty one as well. So, yeah, getting a flu shot would be a very good idea. Where can you go to get a flu shot?
Well, several employers offer flu shots to their employees in an eye toward keeping them on the job and healthy and productive. But you can also call up your doctor's office. But several of the major pharmaceutical chains, the Walgreens, CVS, et cetera, offer flu shots. And you can go to two different websites, flu.gov and flushot.healthmap.org. And both of those websites have searchable functions that you can look for places giving out flu shots or places you can buy a flu shot in your area. And again, you're probably looking at about $30 or so to pay for it. And we'll put links to both of those websites up at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
Yeah. And any other tips when it comes to the flu shot, Kevin?
If you are sick and you can possibly stand it, stay home. Make sure you're washing your hands as much as you possibly can without getting diagnosed with OCD. The only people who should avoid the shot are definitely babies, people who already have the flu, and people with an allergic reaction to chicken eggs. But even after the fever is gone, I know people like this, and I've probably been guilty of it myself. Don't be a hero. Get your rest. Sit home in front of the TV or the computer and just, you know, bail out on the holidays or whatever for a few days until you get better. Don't infect everybody else and just get better.
Yeah. Take care. Good advice. Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services that we discuss are suitable for every investor or any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, if you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And it is time now for the On Your Money email bag. And we received an email from Nick in Madison who says, "Hi, Kevin and Joy. What advice do you have for a young adult who's graduated last spring, was able to find a job in his field, and is beginning to pay back student loans? What advice do you have on finding a new or used vehicle that won't stretch his finances too far? Is one better over another in this situation?" So, Kevin, what would you recommend?
Well, first of all, congratulations to Nick. Good for you. You sound like, based on many of the calls and emails we get here at On Your Money, being a recent graduate with a job in your field, you're almost in the minority. So good for you. And the conventional wisdom for this is to go out and buy a very low-cost vehicle that is relatively reliable but has some high miles on it, and then save your money so that you can pay for repairs and maybe eventually buy a new car.
You don't agree with the conventional wisdom?
Not necessarily, and several other studies are starting to back me up on this. Consumer Reports recently did a study and found that in many cases, buying a new car, getting a nice price on it, and financing it, even paying the interest, can actually be a better deal than buying a late model used car. One of the reasons I am an advocate of this is because in a situation like Nick's, where he has some income, but he also probably doesn't have a ton of savings set around on close at hand, he'd be better off to buy a new car. And yes, he'd probably pay some interest, pay higher prices, but he'll have more predictable cost going forward. If he gets a loan, he's going to, first of all, have very low interest rates because interest rates on credit on vehicles right now, especially new ones, are close to 3%, and 0% financing is available on many of these vehicles. And then he's going to have very predictable cost because he is going to have a car payment. And he's probably going to pay a little bit more for car insurance than if he were to buy a lower-cost vehicle. But that's going to be pretty much it, because the car is going to, first of all, be more reliable, and second of all, any problems will probably be covered under the warranty. So he's less likely to have a breakdown. And the problem, of course, Joy, is if you buy a low-cost used car, you never know what you're going to have coming up for expenses. And even if you say, all right, I've put aside $2,000 or $3,000 for expenses for this, so oftentimes you're forced to spend $3,000 putting getting a car back up to being worth $2,000 again, mm-hmm. which is very difficult to do. And the car might be, you know, out of commission for 2 or 3 days, so you're forced to find a loaner or rental car or scramble around trying to look for that. And then even if you do at that point try to buy, say, all right, I'm done with this car, I got to get a new one. Well, you're buying in a hurry, which can end up, as with most big ticket items, costing you a lot more money than if you buy one deliberately and take your time to do it. So I think it's better for him to go out and if he has good credit and get a low interest loan, he should get a new car and possibly even lease one.
Tell me more about leasing. Why would you want to lease a car, Kevin?
Well, the lease, basically you're just paying for the use of the car while you have it. And so you still get the benefits of the new car, but your payments are not going to be as high as if you're actually buying the car down. And let's be honest, if you're borrowing money to buy a car, you're still technically don't own it. The bank really owns it until you pay the loan off. So a lease allows you to get behind the wheel of a vehicle without having to pay so much down. But you do need to be careful about many of the different components of a lease and not focus just on the monthly lease payment for it. And after the first of the year, we're going to talk a little bit about the advantages and some of the pitfalls of leasing a vehicle.
All right, good. Well, I have a question for you along the same lines as Nick, and it has nothing to do with my husband walking around car lots lately. He... Anyway, right now there is some, you know, dealerships are having these end of the year sales, not to mention names, but the Toyota-thon. And one of the incentives is 0% financing. So this is that a good deal, or is there something in the fine print, Kevin? Do you know?
No, that usually is a pretty good deal. You should still try to get the lowest possible price first. Try to negotiate that down. And one of the sites you can go to is TrueCar.com, which tells you more about what the actual cost for the dealer is and allows you to shop around locally. But then you should start talking about financing. And one of the things you should check with the dealer is, if I pay cash for this or if I get financing somewhere else, do I get a further discount on the purchase price of the vehicle? And if you don't, then it's probably best just to take the 0% financing. But if you do, you might want to go to your bank or credit union, find out what they are charging for the loan, and then see what kind of discount the dealer gets by paying cash for the car.
Yeah, but and if you do have, you could pay cash for the car, you should still get a low-interest loan just because it's so darn low?
Well, because it's so darn low and it gives you more flexibility, it's more difficult if you should run into an emergency and you don't have a lot of money set aside. It's actually very difficult to go back in and get the same terms on a vehicle that's now a used vehicle. If, let's say, 2 years down the road, you have this used car that's paid for, but you need to borrow against it, it gets a lot tougher to borrow against it at that point, and you will pay a higher interest rate when you do get a loan against it. So I'd rather have you start off with a new car loan and a very low interest rate, pay it off as slowly as possible, and keep that money set aside. The only reason I'd have you pay that off any faster is if you don't trust yourself that if that money's sitting there, you're going to spend it on something you wish you wouldn't. So then you're better off paying off the loan. But otherwise, if you trust yourself just to park it aside, just make the payments, and just like mortgages, make the payments as low and slow as you possibly can.
Well, we also received a note from Miranda in Madison who says, Joy, just tuned in time to hear the recommendation of cardboard boxes and tape as a great cheap gift for kids. This product is a cheap and awesome way to enhance cardboard building and crafting. We've had a lot of fun with them. Highly recommended. Add the link to your list. Smiley face. Thanks for the show. What was on this link, Kevin?
It was a website called Mr. McGroovies, MRMCGroovies.com. And the site is completely devoted to tools and plans and little devices you can use to build cardboard forts and different kinds of products. And the thing that she highlighted specifically are these really neat little plastic rivets you can use to fasten a cardboard together, especially at right angles. And we'll have a link up to that website at onyourmoney.com. But it's a neat little site. And like we mentioned, if you're shopping for kids and you don't know what to get them, go around, go in the basement, and go to some of the larger stores, furniture stores, department stores, whatever, and see if you can get some big boxes. And if you give the kids a giant box full of boxes, I guarantee that will be the thing they play with most on Christmas Day.
I bet. And we will have some more unusual or non-traditional gift ideas, if you haven't done your Christmas shopping yet, coming up a little bit later in the program. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC, with offices in Eau Claire and in Madison. If you have a question about managing your money, if you have a personal finance question for Kevin, we do have an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Money too tight to mention. Oh,
money, money.
We are talking about money. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Certified Financial Planner Kevin McKinley. And coming up in our Smart Assets segment. We'll have some advice for those of you who have pensions, including the Wisconsin State Retirement Plan. That's coming up during On Your Money. Right now, though, time for you to call us with your personal finance questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our first caller is Clara in Madison. Hi, Clara.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. What's your question?
I just want to say I'm a longtime listener, and I'm excited to call in. It's my first time.
Oh, good. Thanks, Clara.
I have a question. So I'm 23, and I recently just got a good job where I'm making some more money, and I have low student loan debt, and I just wanted to ask what the best way to save money would be, whether that would be investing or an IRA or things like that. I'm already maxing out my employer's contribution to my 401k.
Oh, she's only 23, Kevin.
Sounds a little bit like she's bragging, doesn't it, Joy?
Well, she has the right to brag.
Clara, you have a right to brag, Clara. Good for you, and thank you for your long time. Usually when people call in, they say long-time caller, first-time listener. So it's a good thing that you're a long-time listener, first-time caller. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Clara, good for you, and definitely max out your pre-tax retirement savings, and it's close to $17,000 this year, bumping up a little bit next year. So I really encourage people who are fortunate enough or worked hard enough to, like Clara, to be able to not only have a job but have money set aside. In your early 20s, please max out your retirement saving until you get into your early 30s. And then if you feel like stopping at that point, go ahead and do it. And what you'll find, Clara, is that you will actually get more money by the time you retire than if you say, you know what, I just got out of college, I'm going to travel, I'm going to spend too much money on a new car, like you said to the last emailer, and buy a nice place and really live it up. And I'm young, so I'm not going to worry about retirement. I would rather you worry about retirement first and then live your life. And the secret trick of this, Clara, is that if you save for retirement in your 20s, by the time you get into your 30s, you start getting so old and boring that you really don't have any need to spend that money. So it's an instant way to financial security. The only thing I'd really like to see you do, Clara, is also, if you qualify, is save money into a Roth IRA. Do you know if you qualify for that?
I'm not sure if I do, but I can find out.
Okay. Usually single people with incomes, adjusted gross income, which is the number at the bottom of your tax return, is usually about $100,000. If you make less than that, you qualify for a Roth IRA, and you do not get a tax break on it. But the good news is that you can pull the contribution to the Roth IRA clear out at any time for any reason with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. And you don't have to open it up and make the contribution for 2012 until you do your taxes in April of 2013. So you have plenty of time to do it, and you can contribute $5,000 to that. So I'd recommend if you have any other savings set aside, please put it into a Roth IRA. And you can get that at a local bank or credit union. You can go to a financial services company, or you can go to like one of the major financial services companies online, like Vanguard or Schwab or Fidelity or Ameritrade or all those other companies who advertise during golf tournaments.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Clara, thanks and good luck. Way to go. We'll move now to Aaron in La Crosse. Hello, Aaron.
Hi, what's going on?
Not much.
We're doing a radio show, Aaron. What are you doing?
Well, I got a question for you. I got a couple of nice jobs. You know, I'm on the verge of looking for a house right now. Just wondering where I should start on that.
Wait a minute. Are you a recent graduate, Aaron? What? I missed that.
No, I just got a couple of good jobs. I didn't go to school. Just fell into the right place at the right time.
But you sound kind of young. Can I
prompt? Oh, yeah. I'm 26.
All right. So he's got a couple of jobs. Great. Should he buy a house now, Kevin?
Well, are you doing this, Aaron, because you're tired of renting? Is it because you feel like it's a good investment? Or what are your goals for this house?
I feel like it's a good investment. I took on a life insurance policy, so in case something happens to me, the house is paid for, upon the death or whatever. But basically, I'm just trying to think of, should I buy the house? Because I'm going to mainly buy it because it would be a good investment. Basically, I don't want to get too old to work and then realize I have all these bills.
Mm-hmm. So, well, good news, Aaron, is if you buy a house, your bills are going to get even higher. So that's
the point of buying young when you can work them off. Yeah.
This is a good point. Yes, you are correct. You may not have gone to school, as you say, but you definitely are an intelligent, perceptive guy. Here's what I'd look at. First of all, I would try to stay within 3 times your annual income when you're looking to buy a house, meaning if you make $40,000 a year, I'd like to have you start out buying a house that doesn't cost any more than $120,000, 3 times that $40,000. Second thing is I'd like you to pay 20% down, no more than that, but probably no less. And when you get a mortgage, I would like to have you get a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, and again, get it for 80% of the loan to value of the house, and then pay it off as slowly as you possibly can. I think if interest rates rise and inflation rises in the future, and one of the great things about buying a house right now is going to be getting that mortgage and locking in that very low rate that you can pay off almost as slowly as you want, as long as you make the minimum payment. And I would also have you start looking at your credit report. Go to a site, you can go to myfico.com and check your credit report there for a fee, or you can go to creditkarma.com. Creditkarma.com gives you a free access to your credit score, and they do spit some advertising at you while you're looking at it, but it's still a legitimate site. So creditkarma.com, and get your credit score in place now before you actually apply for the mortgage, so that if there's a problem with it, you can correct it before you actually are sitting in front of a loan officer at a bank or credit union.
Yeah, is it important that someone in Aaron's shoes, Kevin, know that, yes, I want to stay in this community for the next X number of years before buying a house?
Yeah, absolutely, because it always seems like, when life happens while we're making plans and while you think you might be there and if something comes up or a better job opens up somewhere else and you have to move, you can lose a lot of that down payment to not only having to sell in a hurry, but also realtor, listing expenses, et cetera. So I'd much rather have people who are sure they're going to be in the area for at least 3 to 5 years before they purchase a home in the area.
Yeah. Anything else, Aaron?
Nope. That pretty much answered where I should go. Thanks.
All right. Well, good luck with that. Hope you find a nice home. Sounds like that's where he's headed. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money. Kevin is here just about every Tuesday. I say just about because we let him have a day off once in a while, including next Tuesday is Christmas. So, Kevin, you don't have to come in on Christmas and answer questions. And
I come in anyway?
I'm going to be here, but you know what? We're not going to have an On Your Money program next week. We're going to have a special encore presentation of a Joy Cardine show on some sort of holiday theme of some sort. So there'll be a rebroadcast of an interesting talk show. I think we're actually doing one on music and the music that you would recommend somebody hear if they were hearing for the first time. That's the program that we're going to be repeating on Christmas morning. Anyway, Kevin is here just about every Tuesday, give or take one or two, and he's here to answer your questions and to share information and advice on your money. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Send the email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And Steve in Black River Falls is with us. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hi. So what's your question?
Well, I have some observations, and I just wanted to run it by you and Kevin. I've had some IRAs since 2000 is when I've been really watching it. And, of course, we've had some severe downturns, and then it comes back up and so on and so forth. And, and we're not talking a big money here, $100,000 or so, But, it seems like I don't know where to put your money to get any money now, because when I go back to 2000, it seems to me I had as much money in there as there's there today. My observation is the only person who's made money on these IRAs is the financial advisor because they get their cut every year. So I would just like some observations on that.
Yeah, you're probably correct without delving too much into your situation, Stephen. It's one of we call this the lost decade for the last, 10 years, in part because the Dow you know, $13,000 of the Dow Jones Industrial Average at $13,000, if you're using that as an indicator of where your stocks or your portfolio have gone, that's still about the same. I mean, it was back at $14,000 more than 13 years ago, and has been down as low as, I think, $6,600 back in 2009. And so, yeah, a lot of people are looking at those account balances wondering, why haven't I made anything? And sadly, if I had to bet, I think that the next 10 years are probably going to be like the last ones in terms of returns. I don't think we're going to see Dow 36,000 anytime soon for lots of reasons. And so what you should do, and this also relates a little bit to paying a financial advisor, you have to understand that, or at least have to get enough services out of there so you feel like whatever you're paying your advisor is justified by the cost, and it can't be just predicated upon return, because then otherwise sometimes the financial advisor might have an incentive to go out and take more risk on your money than what you would like because he or she feels the need to justify the fee by getting a higher return. And we all like returns. We all like it, but what many people, and especially older people, don't like more than not getting returns is they don't like losing money flat out. So if you're getting those services like help with tax planning, with income planning, other types of issues that you're addressing that have a dollar sign related to them, then it's probably worth the fee. But just judging it on returns, if you're not getting anything else other than return, you're right. You maybe could just do it yourself. And I am a fan of people hanging on to what they have at this point in their lives in many cases rather than trying to grow it. If you're people like Clara and Aaron, the people who called earlier into the show, and you're in your 20s, hey, you got a lot of time, you need growth, and you can handle risk. But by the time we get into our 50s or 60s, for most of us, as we're nearing retirement, we want to enjoy this money, it's better to hang on to what you have rather than try to double or triple it and take the chance that you could lose, you know, 40 or 50% of it just when you need it the most.
Well, right. And you know, I had it in the growth category, and of course, you know, that was probably a mistake. You know, it hasn't really, you know, it's just bounced up and down. So
yeah, we've had this before too. A lot of people, you know, most of the people I work with and a lot of people who listen to the show are in their, you know, late 40s to late 60s, and most people in that age bracket had no money in 1983 and just started accumulating it when the Dow was at 800. And as the Dow went from 800 to 14,000, we became, you know, with all due respect, we became a little spoiled by that. And because I was a history and economics major at UW-Madison, the goodest college in the Big Ten, I studied a lot on how the stock market had done over the last, not just, you know, several years, but several decades and even centuries. And one of the things that struck me at a very early age was that the Dow was actually at 1,000 in 1966. And again, it was at 800 17 years later in 1983, which means that people who basically bought stocks in 1966 made very little money over 17 years. And that's kind of the era I think we're in now and I think we're going to be in. So this notion that we're going to make 10% on our money every single year, I hope that happens, but I don't think it will. And therefore, I don't want to predicate your success, Steve, on this kind of hope. I'd rather have you manage it for more efficiency by cutting costs, cutting taxes, and preserving it rather than trying to stick your neck out too far and get your head chopped off.
Steve, thank you very much for the call, and good luck to you. Time now for Smart Assets, and I know that, Kevin, a few recent items in the news triggered some concerns that you felt that we should address about pensions.
That's right, and this is one of the very common questions I get in my private practice and on the show here. People wondering what they should do with their pension, and it's one thing to say, well, we've got this big lump sum of money, but the pension one is a little tougher to deal with because a lot of times the choices are more limited, but they're more confusing, and it provides a lot of anxiety to people at a time in their lives when they're retiring and they have a lot of anxiety, obviously. So I'd like to try to give some guidance to here and help you negotiate some of those tough decisions if you are going to be facing this question in the future.
So what sorts of worries do you have?
Well, one of it is in a lot of these pensions, they have to publicize the interest rate that the pensions use to determine how funded they are. And in many times, both public and private pensions use a future growth rate of 7 to 8%. The state retirement fund, I think, uses about 7.2% or so. Now, based on past performance, that's probably a reasonable number to use. But as anyone who has read any of those prospectuses about any investment, you can see that past performance is no guarantee a future result. And even in a portfolio that's all stocks, I'll be very pleasantly surprised if these pensions do make 7-8% a year annualized over the next, say, 20 or 30 years. If they have bonds and cash in the portfolio, I don't think they're going to come anywhere near that if they have a balanced portfolio. And if they don't make those rates of return, it can become very costly to either the government or the fund or the private company that's sponsoring the pension. In Illinois, a little while ago, they moved their predicted rate of return, if you will, from 8.5% down to 8%. And then it was revealed that the state needed to kick in an extra $300 million per year to the pension to make it solvent, if you will. And the lower interest rates are, both in terms of predicted returns and actual returns, the higher the liabilities are for the organization.
So what else will you be watching?
If there is a deficit in the pension, how it's going to be covered. Obviously, in the government, in some cases, it does have to come from tax dollars, but also it may have to come from cutting services and staffing. In private pensions, the money has to come out of profits. And it's a very difficult choice for a CEO to say, all right, I've got all these workers here, I've got this product, but I also have these 84-year-old retirees who haven't worked for the company for 30 years. Who am I going to be responsible to? When it comes time to make some very tough decisions. And what actually is happening, I think it's going to happen more, is many companies are actually declaring bankruptcy so that they can basically get out of their private pension obligation because they just realize that there's no way that they can fund it out of and keep the business running as well. And so if there are other pressing obligations for these different organizations, people with pension checks may have a reduction in their pension that they weren't counting on and would just as soon avoid.
Yeah. So do you have any guidelines, rules of thumb for people who have to decide among various pension options?
Yeah. Generally, you want to have the bird in hand rather than having two in the bush. And that involves getting up what you can while you can. If you can get a lump sum, it's often better to take that and just invest it safely where you know where it is for the time being, rather than taking the bet of the pension being not only higher, but also around 15 or 20 years from now. Also, if you are thinking about a pension, you really, and this is true with Social Security, you generally do have to live to be at least 80 before delaying a pension or taking smaller payments for future gratification makes sense. But I like the lump sum. I like the control over the money, and I like the knowledge of where it's at and the access to it if an emergency arises, maybe something that you want to buy, a piece of property, or a negative emergency, like a family member has an uncovered medical expense or something. And even if you don't have the option of the lump sum, I like to see people accelerate the payments as much as possible so you can get something now rather than hope that there's going to be a larger check somewhere down the road.
Yeah. Well, a lot of listeners are participants in the Wisconsin State Retirement Plan, including your friendly host. Any advice for us?
Yeah, there are a lot of people in Wisconsin. There are about 560,000 participants in the state retirement plan. About half of them are active participants, and another almost 300 or so are either retired or inactive, meaning they're not ready for retirement yet, but they don't work for the state anymore. Generally, if you are retiring and you are closer to 62, do not take the accelerated payment option. You're better off taking the flat one and then still triggering Social Security probably sooner rather than later as well. If you are married and you want to provide for a spouse or you have some kids you'd like to leave some money for, the best option for married couples in my mind that I've seen for the state plan is to take the 100% spousal payment and with 180 payments guaranteed, meaning that if you pass away or your spouse passes away, the payments don't change. And even if you both pass away, somebody will still get whatever payments are remaining out of that original 180 monthly payments. If you are still working and you're participating in the state pension, I'd much rather have you be in the core plan, not the variable plan. And I'd also like to see you saving in, you know, your at-work plans like a 403B or a 457 or even a 401K if you have that. Plus, use Roth IRAs. And I think the pension will be there in some form for people who have it coming. But I'd like to see you build up some other savings on the side and be pleasantly surprised by having too much money in retirement rather than not enough.
Got it. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, with offices in Madison and Eau Claire. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234. or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
My mama told me you better shop around. Oh, yeah, you better shop around.
So are you still shopping around? Well, stay tuned for some advice on unusual or non-traditional gifts during On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley, who has some tips for us on some non-traditional gifts that you can give if you're still looking for a gift this year. So just 1 week to go, Kevin, huh?
That's right. What, is it really 1 week?
Well, I know.
I might have to tell the kids Christmas is coming on the 26th or 27th because I've been really busy lately.
You can do that.
Push it back a few days. Right.
So what do you recommend for those of us who haven't gotten a gift for that special someone?
Well, you know, a lot of people either don't want to spend money or they can't spend it, and they'd like to do something that's a little bit more personal, a little bit more valuable, because frankly, many of the people we're giving gifts to could go out and buy the gift themselves. And as we established last week, Joy, that gifts that are given with a lot of thought by the giver are not as appreciated as much as when the recipient gets what he or she has been asking for, the exact gift. So it's very difficult to shop for people. And here's some ways that you can give your time and your efforts and your expertise, and it will save you some money. It might even mean more to that particular person.
All right. Well, so you can give someone time.
That's right. Give that person a day and say, you know what, here is one day. You have a day in my time. Let's pick a day that works for you and works for me, and we'll do whatever you'd like to do. We can, you can do tasks around the house. We can do errands around town. If it's an older person who doesn't get out very much, we can have lunch or dinner or breakfast, whatever you want to do. Or it can be fun. We can go shopping and maybe return all the bad gifts we were given over the holidays and have movies, dinner, drinks, whatever. And this works really well for any age. Kids love these kinds of things. When you say, I'm going to give you a whole day and we're just going to, you get to pick what you want to do and where you want to go. And within reason, we'll spend money on things that you want to do it. And there are several places online if you want to formalize the gift of time. You can make a little coupon. Kodak has a neat one that you can make a little coupon book up for someone if you want. And we'll have a link up to the site of how to do that at onyourmoney.com later on today.
I love that idea. That is one thing that I've been doing the past couple of years, because I don't buy a gift for every single, sister or niece or nephew or what have you, and we will...
Or co-host on...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Show, yeah. Kevin, would you like to go bowling? That's what I sometimes do. We'll have a bowling party. There we go.
That'll be the best gift I've been given.
Yes. Well, anyway, I love that. I love giving a gift of an experience. So there's a little bit to it, but it's time, too. It's just spending time together. So what about in terms of expertise? So what were you thinking of along those lines?
I'm hearing about this a lot, where people of a certain age, maybe 20 to 30 years old, who are really good at running their laptops or their PCs or their smartphones or their tablets, say to perhaps an older generation, not always the case, though, and say, I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I will get into your technological device and I'll clean it up and show you how to make it run easier. If it's a PC or a laptop, you might want to update all the programs that they're using. Install antivirus software, back up the files that they have at one of the free services like Dropbox. And also, if you're really interested in being help, you may want to check with the computer owner, but say, I'd like to get remote access to this, so I'm not going to be in town again for another 6 months, and when you have a problem again in 3 weeks, I'd like to, rather than try to diagnose it with you over the phone and go through unpaid tech support, I'd like to restore, go to my PC or something like that on here so that I can actually get access to the computer and try to fix the problem for wherever I'm at rather than trying to direct you how to do it over the phone.
Yeah, so you could give someone a coupon for a quick retirement portfolio once over?
I don't give that away. On Your Money Show is the only place I'm going to give that away.
Right.
And I earn every, especially in dealing with friends and family members, I earn every single penny.
That's right. That's right. So what about those givers who aren't particularly, they don't have expertise or they aren't tech savvy?
you might want to fire up the crock pot or go into the kitchen and get the soup kettle going and make several portions of different meals, especially ones that have, you know, costly ingredients unless you buy it in bulk. Like lemongrass is a good example. You can't ever find that. And even when you do, you say, gosh, I got to use all this up and it's hard to eat it. So if you want to make a bunch of different meals and then something that's fairly labor intensive, but you can do it for a bunch of different people, package them in a Ziploc bag, label them, and then freeze it, and then box up, and you give it to them and say, you know, here's something you can just throw in the freezer and microwave it when you feel like it. You've got an instant meal at home or at work, and people really appreciate that. And then this is a gift that I was given last year. My family and I took a vacation. I enjoyed the vacation a lot, but my kids, unbeknownst to me, went to Shutterfly.com and put together one of those photo books, and not only chose different photos from the vacation, but wrote in little captions and just said they really appreciated going on the trip or whatever. And I got to be honest with you, I think that cost probably $30, and I can't remember the last gift I got where I appreciated it more than that particular book.
What good kids. That's great. So what do you want this year, Kevin?
This year, again, I think I'd like a couple extra more. Between all the tax issues and how busy we've been at the office, I think I'd just like two or three more days of 2012. If I could get December 32nd, December 33rd, it would really make me a lot happier and make other people happy, too. So that's what I'm asking for.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. Time for more calls for Kevin at 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question about managing money or some sort of personal finance issue, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Erin in Fond du Lac is with us. Hi, Erin.
Good morning. Good morning. My question is, we have a wonderful little farmhouse, and we need some space. One of our kids actually sleeps in a closet. It's big enough for his bed, but it's still a closet. And I'm a remote employee, so I need a home office. We are more than likely upside down on our mortgage. We purchased right before the market crumbled. And we're just wondering, what's the best way to go about funding something like that when you are upside down? We don't have the home equity. Or slowly trying to build up a savings account so that we have a good chunk of the cash that we need, but we're going to have to finance some of it. And we have no idea where to start.
Sure. That's a great question, Erin. I'm glad you're doing this. And the first place I would actually start, and I would I'd say this to other people who are worried about what a lender is going to say about their specific situation, is start with the lender and let the lender say no. You know, lenders only get paid for actually making the loan in the first place. So their incentive is also your incentive. They want to give you this loan for this need. Now, obviously, they have to hope that they're going to get paid back for it, and it has to meet certain constraints. But I would check with the lender at a bank or a credit union and tell them your situation, what you're trying to do. And for people with decent credit, you'd be surprised how many times a lender will just say, you know what, we're just going to give you the money against your good name and good credit and your income and being able to pay it back. And we may be able to refinance it out to a longer period. We may be able to, you know, and even when you're talking about being upside down, let the appraiser tell you what the value of the home is worth for on behalf of the lender rather than you rejecting yourself on hand. Have you talked to a lender yet, Erin, and see what they've said?
We have not. We actually use USAA. My husband is a veteran. So,
okay.
And they're wonderful to work with. So, but I have not spoken to them.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the organization, and they can be a nice nationwide solution, if you will, especially if you are current or past military. But yeah, I would check for there are several good credit unions in your area, Erin, and go there too and just see what they say and just say, we're thinking about doing this. I guarantee you will not have the worst story to show up at the lender's office that particular day. And again, their incentive is to try to get the loan for you, earn their fees and earn their interest cost on this. So check with them, tell them your situation, be frank about it, and let them tell you that they can't do it. And then after that, decide if, you know, how are we going to do this? We're going to try to do this out of cash, or if there's a better way to go out and borrow it. My guess is if your credit's in good shape, you're probably going to be able to get a loan, whether it's secured or unsecured, is probably based on more information than you're able to give right now. But no, definitely go to USAA and some local credit unions and see what they say.
Thank you, Erin, and good luck. Steve in Trumbull County is with us now. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Kevin. I tell you what, my daughter's having a baby. I want to know, A, how much money to put away, and B, where to put it so that he'll have money for college.
Well, what a good grandpa to be.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Steve. That's pretty neat. And that's the having grandkids is the reason that my wife and I had kids in the first place. So good for you. You know what? An easy way to do this, Steve, is to go to a 529 college savings plan like EdVest. EdVest.com, EdVest.com. It's Wisconsin's okay. college savings plan. You can use a lot of different ones, but you get a little tax break on a state income basis anyway by using the EdVest plan. And the good and the bad news is that the current cost of 4 or 5 years of college runs probably somewhere from $60,000 to $100,000 for most kids. And that price is probably only going to go up. The good news is in 15 to 20 years, I have a feeling that there are going to be a lot of pressures and solutions to that ever-rising cost. So if you can even save, you know, a few hundred dollars to a few thousand dollars a year, that would be a huge difference over 18 years. And the EdVest plan gives you a lot of different savings options, some very safe ones that aren't going to earn you very much but will be there, to some more aggressive ones, and specifically what are known as age-based portfolios. And what these do, Steve, is you put the age in of this new grandchild, and as that grandchild gets older and becomes more likely to use the money, the portfolio becomes more and more conservative, meaning it probably won't make as much, but it won't lose as much as he or she is in the teenage years and likely to need the money. So that's a good way to go if you say, I don't want to try to sort through all these investments. The age-based portfolio is a pretty neat way. And again, that's edvest.com.
Steve, thanks for calling and congratulations. A listener called in wanting you, Kevin, to clarify something that he heard in last week's show. He thought he heard you say that someone should expect to need 200 times the amount of one's annual living expenses in their retirement. For someone whose annual living expenses total $25,000, 200 times that is in the millions, and the caller wants to know if he misunderstood something.
Well, the good news, too, for people who didn't catch everything, hopefully you're focusing more on driving or whatever else you're doing than listening to Joy and me. But you can go online either at WPR.org or onyourmoney.com to listen to archives of the show and go over them very slowly and rehear, if you can stand it, what we've been talking about. But to answer the listener's question, the factor that I like to see with people when they're approaching retirement is to have 200 times their net monthly expenses, not their annual expenses. 200 times the net monthly expenses. By net, I mean take your gross monthly expenses and then subtract Social Security and pension payments, and then whatever the amount is that you have, if you have 200 times that amount in savings, you're doing pretty well. And it can be in your retirement plan, it can be in CDs, it can be in stocks or whatever. But let's say you're spending $5,000 a month and you expect to get $2,000 a month from Social Security, that leaves a $3,000 shortage. And having 200 times that $3,000 is $600,000, which is still a lot of money, but it's not in the millions, so hopefully that provides some relief to the listener.
Good. So time enough for the website of the week, Kevin.
PlasticJungle.com allows you to buy discounted gift cards to give or use yourself, and it allows you to sell all those gift cards that you get and would rather use somewhere else. PlasticJungle.com will have that at our website, OnYourMoney.com, later on today.
And, Kevin, you are enjoying the Christmas holiday next Tuesday and New Year's holiday the Tuesday after that. We'll go bowling after the first of the year sometime. How's that sound?
Sounds wonderful.
Four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.